Hey, get your fresh BizCast here. I'm DC Dennison, on location in South Station, Boston. I'm here working on a portrait of this place, kind of a wacky, hypertext, web-enabled thing. If you're ever in South Station with something Wi-Fi enabled, check it out. Today I talked to Michael Hess, who runs the bookstore in the middle of the terminal. I'll add some of our conversation to the end of the BizCast. But first, we've got Peter Howe on cell phone tours. We have Jen Abelson on deluxe movie theaters. And we've got the first installment of a brand new series on workplace etiquette with Doreen Vigue and Peter Post. First up, Peter Howe. Peter Howe, what's the significance of this?
That's going to be the sound of the lion at the Franklin Park Zoo, which is a sound that you would hear if you used this new cell phone tour service that they just launched.
Yeah, how does that work?
This is a new thing that you may have heard of other versions of this. There's one in Boston where you can use your cell phone to dial in and you hear a tour of Boston that's narrated by Steven Tyler of Aerosmith. I won't attempt to do a Steven Tyler imitation on the podcast.
We'll play it later.
That'd be good. That'd be good. And but this is a new thing that just went live this week, the week of the 18th, where you dial a phone number, $4, you can listen to a series of audio clips about each of the different animal exhibits there. Mm-hmm. About 37 different things for you to listen to. On this one, you would, after hearing the lion's roar, you'd have the zoologists explain a number of things about what mm-hmm. the lions eat, the fact that they do well in Boston winters because they have a heated rock to sleep on.
Yeah.
And it's I think it's a bona fide trend that we're starting to see with a lot of national attractions or museums. The Minuteman Historic Park in Lexington is doing this. The idea is instead of them having to keep a bunch of Walkman and tapes that they rent out, they have you use your cell phone to dial in and hear an audio tour.
Yeah, it seems so much simpler. When I think of those things that you would check out, they always look severely banged up, and it must be murder to maintain them. And now everybody can just use their own cell phone.
Yeah. No, it's outsourcing of audio tours.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, I actually listened to some of the zoo ones, and I was surprised at how informative they really were. I mean, I was listening to one on prairie dogs, and it told me 100% more about prairie dogs than I ever knew before.
That's so with barking prairie dog sound effects.
Yeah.
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 No, and well, one of the two narrators of Franklin Park is this British woman with an absolutely lovely plummy accent.
Yes, right.
So I personally could just listen to her all day long. And it's not just the Franklin Park Zoo, but also the Stone Zoo up in Stoneham, where they're doing the same thing. That's a smaller zoo, but it's in both cases it's $4 a day for as many clips as you want to listen to. Plus, mm-hmm. Plus you are paying for airtime. Whoever your cell phone is, Verizon, Singular, Sprint, Nextel,
right?
But
that's
one thing
probably
that
not a big factor for most people, especially if it's on weekends and stuff like that.
No, that's actually a point I make in the story is given that so many people have these plans with free nights and weekends, Saturday or Sunday is a very popular day to go to the zoo. A lot of times it's going to be free airtime that you're using anyhow.
Yeah. So do you think this kind of thing will catch on in other venues other than zoos and things like that?
Well, I would be really curious to see if it how, for example, museum owners feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
A big challenge there is just making sure that you've got a good enough signal inside the depths of the Museum of Fine Arts or the Science Museum that it would be, again, the whole getting you, the museum operator, out of the headache of maintaining all these banged-up cassette players for people who want to take tours. That would be interesting. One thing that does sometimes rub people the wrong way is I've encountered a situation or heard about a situation at the Minuteman Park where this person's walking through this beautiful, quiet, historic place, and all of a sudden this guy comes walking along with his cell phone on speaker mode with this big squawking, let's ruin the whole environment.
Yeah.
Sound coming out, and it's him listening to the tour of the whatever the tavern or the,
yeah, right,
the place was there. So I could see, it definitely raises all the same cell phone etiquette issues. But as a as an amenity, as a way for people to learn more, as you mentioned, prayer dogs, just mm-hmm. for, you know, as a way for people to learn more about stuff. I'm sure that, you know, there'll be a lot of interest in experimenting with it and figuring out what's the right pricing mechanism. Is, you know, is $4 a good price, or is it too much? Is there potentially a way that you do a sponsorship deal where you get the cell phone company to agree to pick up the cost of providing it, and if you're a customer of Verizon or Singular, say, you don't pay any airtime for a call. That might be a business model that makes sense.
All right. Well, great. Hey, thanks. And on the way out, I'll play a little bit of the Steven Tyler tour of Boston. Walk this way.
Hey, this is Steven Tyler, and welcome to Rebels and Dreamers in Boston. This stop is about gardens that even a rocker can love. Don't worry. We'll get to that rebel stuff soon enough. This park is quite an oasis, eh? Well, it used to be a swampy marshland. In the mid-1800s, the city filled it in and planned to generate tax revenue by building houses here. But a group of citizens put a stop to that nonsense and established America's first public botanical garden. So, let me show you my town. As I love to say, walk this way!
Jen Abelson, you just returned from a movie theater in Millbury and turned in a front page story on your visit. What took you out to Millbury?
Sure. Well, I've been noticing the box office slump over the last, I guess it was 19 out of 20 weekends where box revenues were down compared to last year. And overall, there's been a decline in attendance over the last 2 years. And so I wanted to know, you know, in light of all this sort of poor industry trends, who's actually having success? Where mm-hmm. is it things working? So I went out to Millbury, where there's this first in New England cinema deluxe concept, where it's sort of an upscale theater offering various different amenities, reserved seating, sort of at seat, you know, the ushers will bring food to you and other sorts of features that they think and they say have proven that people will come earlier there, stay later, spend more. So mm-hmm. that's what brought me out there.
Did it win you over?
It was interesting. I mean, I don't know necessarily if I would spend more money for reserve seating. I guess on a weekend, maybe that's probably a great feature. It seems for families, for parents, they're sort of aiming to create a one-stop evening, so to make it easier so that people mm-hmm. can go there. There's a restaurant. People can, you know, go there for their restaurant, go there for drinks, you know, mm-hmm. have a place to see a movie all in one spot to kind of make it more convenient.
Yeah. You know, that actually makes sense in that if you go out to dinner and then are going to a movie, there's that level of stress in between dinner and movie. Are we going to get in?
Right,
is there
exactly.
a line? We're going to be able to sit together. So this way, I guess you just get there and you're there.
Exactly. Yeah. And I guess the reserve seating, you know, guarantees you've got a specific seat. You could mm-hmm. do self-service where it's kind of like picking out your seat on an airplane. You could pick exactly what you want, and mm-hmm. you can even call ahead for reservations. So, you know, I met a woman who said, you know, if I'm going to pay the money to have a babysitter, like, I want to have a good night out and I want to have an easy night out. And mm-hmm. this, you know, she had a martini before the movie, you know, had some food, went to the movie, and then, you know, I saw her drinking a Corona Light or something.
Wow. So, drinking in movies just don't seem to go together.
Yeah, well, they don't allow the liquor to be brought into the theater because mm-hmm. I think it's probably liability and concern about control with younger crowds. And so all of it's in the bar, basically, where the drinking can happen. Mm-hmm. But food can be brought into the theater, and they have an extensive concession stand area. So
I guess they have to differentiate themselves from people's home theater, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if people are just have a big couch and a plasma television, you know, that's pretty hard to compete with.
Right, yeah, and especially with DVDs, they've been sort of skyrocketing in sales, and the window between DVDs and movies have shortened from when it used to be 6 months before it got into the movie theater, and now it's 3 months when it'll get released on DVD, and so people are concerned. People say, oh, I could just wait 3 weeks and mm-hmm. I can, you know, watch it on my fancy plasma. So, you know, and then it only costs $15, whereas, you know, a night out at the movies can cost, you know, for mm-hmm. two people can, you know, cost over $20 or whatnot. And so this, you know, what National Amusement says that they're trying to do is to create a real, like, community entertainment center, and they're looking at everything new to add interactive gaming, video games. They're going to be bringing in comedy clubs and musical performances at night to create it more than just a film, because they say they can't control what's, you know, the film, but they can control everything else. So.
Yeah. So do you think that in the future every cinema complex will have a sort of deluxe, you know, part of it will be deluxe?
I think if they want to survive, I think that's the way that theaters need to move towards. They need to differentiate themselves from their plasma TVs and all of the future ones. You know, with National Amusements, they're planning on the Cinema Deluxe concept. And there's another chain down south that also is, you know, providing even more luxuries like child care, you know, daycare centers, valet parking, and you need something to make yourself different. And the, you know, simple megaplexes that, you know, just had tons of theaters but nothing else, or, you know, or stadium seating isn't doing it anymore for them. So,
yeah, great. Hey, thanks a lot.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm Doreen Vigue, and I'm speaking today with Peter Post of the Emily Post Institute. Peter is the grandson of Emily Post, who everyone knows is the doyen of good manners. Peter, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, we wanted to ask you about some topics that touch all of us in the workplace in terms of what to do, what kind of manners we should have when we're at work. Everyone's on deadline. Everyone's stressed. Work is not necessarily thought of as the place where you have to be on your toes, although it really should be. I think people get very used to each other at work, so they maybe let some of their manners slip. So I wanted to ask you about some specific things. Let's start first with personal grooming, and I'll give you an anecdote that happens here quite a bit. It might curl your hair a little bit, Peter. There are several people who I work with in my little pod who think that clipping their fingernails during the workday is A-okay. Please tell me that that is not okay, and then tell me how I can get them to stop.
You know, clipping the fingernails, we can even up the ante one, and I hear from people who want to know what to do with people who take their shoes and socks off and actually clip their toenails.
No way.
Absolutely.
What kind of businesses? Are these lawyers taking their shoes and socks off?
Fortunately for me, I don't know what kind of business
I don't think any of us really want to know.
But you know, the reality is that personal grooming in general should be done, you know, in privacy. And the reason's really simple if you think about it. But besides the fact that you could be grossing out your coworkers, which really isn't something you want to do, if a client, if an advertiser, if a prospect were to be walking by, what kind of an image is that going to be sending, you know, with your shoes and socks off, clipping your finger, your toenails, or clipping away on your fingernails?
Unless you manufacture toenail clippers,
you know,
right?
They don't. They're just bigger fingernail clippers, I think. And so, all of that kind of a thing, and this goes for any of the other kinds of personal grooming. We've been asked about putting lotion on your hands or on your feet. Doing a full facial makeover for a woman, you know, I mean, a little bit of lipstick, that's probably okay at the desk. Maybe a quick brush of the hair, that would probably suffice. But anything beyond that, really, take it to the restroom. That's the easiest thing to do. Take it to the restroom.
So feet are out in all situations. I mean, I can basically understand that.
Yeah.
But how do we tell our colleagues who are engaging in this offensive behavior that they must stop?
Okay, remember that your goal in telling a client about a behavior isn't to embarrass them. So shouting across the cubicle farm, "Hey, Jack, quit cutting your fingernails or your toenails," isn't going to do any good. Jack's going to get his back up against the wall. The better thing to do is to say, "Jack, could I talk to you for a few minutes?" And go to a place where it's private. You know, if you're in a cubicle farm, there's often a desk, an office place you can go to, a conference room. Go someplace where you're private and say, "You know, Jack, I'm going to talk to you something. It makes me a little uncomfortable to do it, but if the shoe is on the other foot," with just something of a joke here.
And keep your shoe on your foot,
right,
by the way.
I hope you talk to me, because it really is actually something that affects both you, and it may even affect all of us around the office. I want to talk to you about the fact you've been clipping your nails, you know, your toenails, at your desk, and it's really grossing people out. Can we talk about that for a minute? Maybe we could figure out a way to do this that's not going to gross people out. And you're now talking to him individually. You're not embarrassing him. You're not putting him in a situation where he's defensive. But you're correcting the behavior, correcting the situation, and hopefully ending up with Jack thinking, "Hey, this person's pretty okay, you know?"
Right, right. So it's all in the approach, obviously, and it has to be a friendly manner. And as you say, you can't be doing it in front of others because that's just going to lead to trouble.
Never works.
Okay.
Never works.
Read Peter Post in the Boston Sunday Globe Business and Money section. He writes a business etiquette column. Peter Post of the Emily Post Institute. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate
it. Take care. Bye, Peter.
Bye.
Appreciate it.
And now, as promised, some of my conversation with Michael Hess, who runs the bookstore in the center of South Station Terminal.
So, Michael Hess, how's business?
Business is actually fantastic this month.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really picked up.
What's selling?
Well, right now, the Harry Potter, obviously, is the big book of the summer. Book called Freakonomics is big.
Oh, yeah,
1776 is a big seller this summer.
What's the market like here? What are South Station book buyers? What are they looking for?
Well, most of our business is commuters, so it's a lot of like quick train reads, the mysteries, the pocket paperbacks.
What's a good quick train read?
Well, any of the John Grisham books always sell. We sell a lot of romance novels.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Huh. So what are you guys recommending these days?
Well, we're recommending Kite Runner. This right now is probably our biggest selling book.
Oh, huh.
It takes place, it's about a family in Afghanistan.
Huh.
And just about their struggles and life there and political climate. But it's been recommended, I guess, in a bunch of book groups.
Huh.
But that's the big book for us right now.
So any trends in publishing that you're noticing?
Well, yeah, there is a trend that I've started to notice that they're starting to make a larger size mass market. A lot of the books are coming out in this bigger size.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't really understand the point of it unless it's because the print's bigger, but it's actually, on average, $2 more.
Really?
But I've noticed a lot of those pocket paperbacks are coming out.
Like, what would be an example of that? What kind of book?
Sandra Brown has one that...
So they just make a bigger, bigger book.
Smaller than this, but bigger than the pocket.
Huh.
It's like in between. I don't understand the point of it, but I think that's going to be a new
format.
Yes,
sort of.
It looks that way. And it's not just one publisher. It looks like a lot of them are starting to,
So it's like bigger than a pocket paperback, but smaller than a
trade paperback. Yeah, if somebody could explain to me why they're doing that. Well, right, and I think that people don't want to pay $10 for a pocketbook that's this big.
Oh,
if it looks like it's a little bigger, they're willing to pay
maybe
more.
They're getting a little
and that is the new trend, too. Books are getting really expensive.
Yeah, like what's the entry level? Like if I just want to pick up a book for a train trip, what is
it? You're going to pay $8 for a pocket paperback.
It's not so bad.
But regular books are like...
15, 16.
Nice.
Hardcovers now are anywhere from 26 to 30.
Yeah, wow. Any surprises? Any ones that you thought would fly off the shelves and didn't, or that you didn't think would be much and all of a sudden?
That Janet Ivanovich I thought we would sell a lot of, but it sort of slowed down.
That really looks like a mass market book,
It is.
It's got that, got that tight face.
But a lot of people are big fans of hers, but we haven't been selling that one so well in the hardcover. I thought that Bob Woodward book, it really just tanked out for us. Yeah,
really?
We got a bunch of them, but we haven't hardly sold any.
Maybe people sort of felt they already knew
the
story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they didn't rush a book out of a story that's been beaten to death,
Yeah, right, by the time that came out.
And then they're like, oh, hey, well, there's the ending. We know who the guy is. But I don't know if anyone wants to go spend $30 on a book, and reread it. But actually, the business, it really has increased in the last 2 months. I thought the summer was going to be bad, but I don't know what it is, the silver line or what, but... It just seems like there's a lot more people coming through.
Also, I don't think the Acela cancellation would have hurt you.
It did. Yeah, I mean, we noticed a definite hit in sales, but this month's been really good.
Wow.
Even outside of the Harry Potter, I mean, we were doing pretty well.
Oh, great. All right. Hey, thank you.
Oh, no problem.
Thanks for listening, and check in next Wednesday for a brand new BizCast. Or better yet, subscribe and have BizCast automatically delivered to your computer and MP3 player.